get it off, let it off, shut it off, get it off, let it off, shut it off, get it off, let it off, shut it off, get it off, let it off.
Ooh-wee, it's me. Ooh-wee, it's me. Ooh-wee, it's me. Ooh-wee, it's me. I'm doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along.
I'm glad we're together again.
Yeah!
That's right. It's Thursday night, 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You know where you are. You know you ain't got shit to live for. You know you ain't aspiring to nothing. You know you ran out of weed. Your prescription's expired. You ain't got no milk in the fridge. Your Cheerios are old. You know you haven't vacuumed the house in about 2 weeks. You know your girlfriend left you. You ain't got shit to live for. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to make it all right. We're going to strain your life out today on this episode of Nestorius Public Radio. I'm your host, Nestor Rodriguez, a.k.a.
Nestorius. Yo, son, we back again on a Thursday night looking right. I got my shorts on because it's hot. I got my socks pulled down low. I'm in the flow. I'm ready to go. We got articles. We got a fucking YouTube page now so you can suck it.
News particles, you know what I'm saying? We got lint balls in your ear. And to the right of my man, that was Simon Kaufman right there, my co-host. Last week, 2 weeks ago, I had a guest co-host, and I said, and I'm Nestorius, a.k.a. motherfucker didn't know what to say.
Ah, this
you
guy.
Know, you know what I'm saying? It's like, anyway, it's my man Simon Kaufman, co-host. It's my, to
back
his right,
in effect.
You know what I'm saying? In the fact. Got my man right here, Rich Corbin.
What's up, everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Freshly right. Off of fucking... flavonoids, proteins, and fucking now cigarettes. He's off that shit too. Day five of cigarettes. Día número cinco de cigarrillos.
Easier done than
that's
said.
That's right. That's right.
Ain't no thing.
And that's right. That's right. And to his right, we got Twish. Honey, what's up, baby?
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
We're gonna be talking about the electric run at some point in the show. We're going to have a caller. We're going to have a representative of the electric run, human resources director Liz Dunn should be calling in a little bit. So we're just going to like wiggity wiggity wash, don't stop, wish wash.
Liz Dunn, dun.
Dun. To the beat, to the top, rock, don't stop. The jiggly jig, don't wagga dagga hip hop dop.
Yo, the electric run, we in your sector having fun. No guns, just hanging out, showing the love, son.
No drugs, bubble gum, you know what I'm saying? Pop, pop, you don't stop. Hip-hop music is going loud like you just don't care. Wow, wow.
Yo, we got the gum, the grape, hubba bubba. I'm the Superman flow lover in your undercover.
The bubblelicious, the doublelicious. The everybody chewing and blowing bubbles all over the pishes.
The eating Rolaids, we don't got AIDS.
What'd you just do?
I didn't have my speaker on my laptop.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just interrupted the flow in stereo. So, I believe we're on episode... What episode? Episode 28? Is that right? Is this episode 28? This is... Probably the 32nd episode that we have on Nestorius Public Radio up on iTunes. You can check it out. We have a couple of video episodes. But this is actually episode 28, I believe. And episode 27, if I'm not mistaken, last week, we're talking about hydrogenated oils and the quest for immortality. You know...
And you can attain both. You can attain mortality by ingesting enough hydrogenated vegetable oil.
You can attain mortality?
Yeah.
You can attain plasticity, too.
Yeah, because your body won't decompose.
Yeah, you will live forever. You do plastic surgery from the inside out.
Botoxification. Yeah. So what happened after last week, man? You know, what happens here on Nestorius Public Radio is basically this. You're sitting at home, you know, you're depressed, right? And you know, your life has come to this, pretty much.
Your life sucks. You can't get anyone to call you back. You're making love with yourself way too much.
Yeah. And you hear an article or something that we're talking about, and the bell goes on. Bing, 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 bing. And you go, wow, I never thought of that. That's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. You got three buffoons here, and sometimes a guest.
Guest buffoon comes in to help.
Sometimes a very pretty lady who come in.
No, a guest professional too. A guest professional to come in and drop their 2 cents. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then what happens after that bell rings and you pay attention a little bit, you start thinking about stuff like myself. I mean, we basically look up these articles and whatnot. And I went home last week, you know, after Rich and I the previous week started looking at what hydrogenated and partially hydrogenated oils were. And I found out that, you know, my peanut butter that I've been pretty much consuming in lieu of crap, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm thinking it's healthy, right? You know, like if I'm not, you know, ready to go outside and get regular breakfast, or I don't want to cook up some bacon and eggs or whatever, my default thing is peanut butter and banana, right? How many times have I done that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a relatively healthy.
You put peanut butter in your smoothies.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I've seen you do it. Right. I'm like, what are you doing?
I make smoothies. I drop some peanut butter in there and some, you know, fresh berries or whatever the hell, some powdered greens.
Good for you.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that, you know, I'm doing something healthy, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how many years I've been doing this shit. And just out of, you know, curiosity, I looked at my peanut butter and the shit doesn't say partially hydrogenated oil on the back. It says fully hydrogenated oil. They're like, I don't give a fuck. We're going to ingest you with plastic, with chemicals. Who gives a shit? And you're going to eat it.
Yeah. And your stomach's going to look like a glow stick. And people are going to lay on top of you to get a tan.
Yeah.
And just so you guys don't think that, you know, we don't think about and actually think about all the shit that we talk about, this goes beyond this studio.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
this is real life. This is stuff that started before this evening, and it continues even further.
Well, what
and
it
that's
does
proof right there, because now you're going to change your brand to peanut butter.
Well, what it does is it opens up the line for dialogue. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just the dialogue in between your head,
right,
as you're walking down the street or you're driving in the freeway right before an accident, right before you cut somebody off, there's a dialogue. So I looked this up and I'm like, damn. So now, you know, I'm more aware, even though, you know, we have this, you know, conversation, I don't know how many fucking times on this show, how many times, you know, aside from this show.
Yeah, that was always my point.
Right.
That's a default point that I get pissed off about is that, you know,
right,
is that the government claims that they're so worried about us and yet they don't do anything about all the chemicals that are being put in our food.
No.
Yeah, they make us wear seatbelts and helmets and they let the FDA, government run, lets companies put shit food in our system, which is, you know, we probably have a safer time if seatbelts had never been invented. We'd probably all live longer.
Well, yeah. That's a long, never-ending
It's for money
debate
and all of that. They mask it in, oh, it's your safety. Oh, really? Is it for my safety?
Well, the Food and Drug Administration is run and manipulated by all these lobby groups that are all these food and food corporations that manufacture all this crap. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so basically, the Food and Drug Administration really has no incentive to, like, get rid of the shit that's toxic. They just have an incentive to be there and say, yeah, we're looking out for you. We have to make sure. You have to make sure what? Mm-hmm. That somebody's fucking anus doesn't explode and double bubbles don't come out of it? Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, when I was thinking about this earlier today, by the way, if you're home and you're following me on this, if you're digging it, if you're vibing on it, if you're chilling, illing, dealing with the elements of your vibrating refrigerator because it's humming and shit, just pick up your phone, knock on your neighbor's door, and ask to borrow the phone. And if you're interested in, like, getting involved in the conversation or just calling in and saying what your, you know, zodiac sign is, call 1-800-893-9562. Now,
well, you know, before we get...
Early, let me just finish this the thought before I just got into the number, sidetracked by announcing the number. I was thinking about this, right? I was thinking, which, by the way, I would like to for us to watch the movie Food, Inc. between now and next week, because that's going to be next week's topic, because the following week is Thanksgiving and we're off the air.
We're going to be eating a lot of food.
Well, I want to talk about food. I'm serious, because I've seen the movie. You've seen the movie, right, Rich? Mm-hmm. Have you seen the movie, Simon?
Not yet.
Because it's not kosher, right? There's no pariv motherfuckers blessing it. But you should watch the movie, Food, Inc. We're going to discuss it, because what's interesting about this whole thing in the Food and Drug Administration is this, right? The FDA, right, regulates what drugs get approved for the market or not.
Like fen-fen.
Whatever the fuck. And what food, what chemicals and whatever drugs get or whatever chemicals are allowed to be put in your food. Mm-hmm. Now, I was thinking this morning, there's a documentary, something about the plague, and God forgive me that I forget this the name of the title of this movie. It's an amazing movie. It's about the gay men's health crisis and ACT UP, the organization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was formed in the mid-80s when the AIDS epidemic happened in New York City. Now, while this is all going on, the Food and Drug Administration is jerking off kumquat amounts of money of American dollars saying, oh, we don't know if this drug is good or this drug is safe. We have that this drug is safe or not, and so basically what these people did, these gay activists, they basically said, you know what, we don't want to wait for the guinea pigs to say it's safe or not. We can't afford to wait. Mm-hmm. We're dying. People are dying. And they basically inundated and barraged the FDA offices, political offices, and they said, use me as a guinea pig. Mm-hmm. And eventually they found the right HIV concoction, and that's why less people are dying today.
Right.
But unfortunately, not that many people are dying that fast with chemicals putting in your food. So we got a caller. I believe Liz Dunn is on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Liz.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Welcome to the Nestorius Public Radio Show.
Thank you very much.
Liz Dunn is the Director of Human Resources of the Electric Run. Tell us, we were just waiting a little time to see when you got on, but tell us a little bit more about what Director of Human Resources is for this organization.
Well, it's kind of interesting. We're definitely a startup company. We're just nearing our first year mark at the end of this month. Still growing hugely. You know, our first international race is on Saturday in Australia.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We're really excited. And there'll be about 26,000 runners there. So people are just having a lot of fun with our run. So I've actually been, this past year, I've been the registration director. And
okay.
So that has been basically anything to do with the human side of the race. So our volunteers, our runners, kind of helping all of that. And then starting this next year, I'll be transitioning to do the HR. So just helping with all of our staff with how fast we're growing. You know, we're a big production. And so we need to make sure that we're taking care of our people to make sure that we help all of you guys have fun.
Right. So for those of you that are tuning in or don't know what the hell just happened, Liz Dunn is the Director of Human Resources, and we're going to talk about the Electric Run. To find out more about the Electric Run, go to electricrun.com and check it out. But basically, it's this nighttime or, you know, nighttime run with all these. It would appear as if they're ravers and people running and having Dayglow bracelets, glasses, and
yeah, which I checked out the site, and I got to tell you, you know, you should go there even if you're not going to run in the race, but if you need some like cool
simulation,
like light up wear. They have some cool stuff, and it's really cheap.
Oh,
like,
you're talking
yeah, the finger lights.
Oh, you're talking about the website, the stuff that they sell.
Yeah, check out the website, the stuff that they sell. It's $20 for, like, I don't know, 20 feet of this blue light. You just put it on and just run around your house naked with this thing on. That'd be awesome.
Well, basically, you know? it's a 5K run at night, and everyone is glowing with all these different, you know, the attire and, you know, bracelets, glasses,
necklaces. And they help you out with that, and that's cool, and they don't charge you, you know, an arm and a leg for it. You know, it's really cool.
So how did this start, Liz?
You know, it's interesting. Our founder, Dan Hill, he actually founded the Ragnar Team Relays that a lot of people are familiar with. And so he's been in the running business for, you know, over a decade. Really enjoyed that, but just has a lot of interesting ideas. And he was friends with the founder of Color Run.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd been talking, you know, before all these fun runs came. Because, I mean, if you think a few years ago, no one did these fun 5Ks that are just popping up everywhere now. And Color Run was really the first one. And so they're talking, they're like, would it be crazy to have runs that were actually fun?
Mm.
And so, you know, the Color Run started, and Dan was still involved with Wagner at the time, but was like, I think it'd be really cool to have a nighttime 5K. And just, it was just crazy enough that he thought it might work. And so that's kind of how it started going. About a year and a half ago, we went down to San Diego with probably about 50 people, and we filmed a promo video and just set up a couple, you know, glow things, this balloon arch that glow in the dark, and, you know, had some neon stuff that we were wearing and just ran back and forth and filmed this video. And so just to think from there, and if you go to our website, electricrun.com, you'll see our promotional video from our LA race.
Yeah.
That was held in
LA. I've seen actual footage. Twish Honey was at the last Saturday's run in San Diego. So it just, I mean, I was supposed to go. I was a little under the weather, but I mean,
sorry about that.
Yeah. No. So I kind of regret it because I mean, it looked like a lot of fun. So it's not just, you know, your normal 5K run. It's an event.
It is, and that's what I love about it, because my background's actually public health. I'm also an occupational therapist, and I worked in wellness prior to coming on and working for the Electric Run. And so for me, you know, a lot of people, I'll tell them, oh, you've got to come out and do a run. And I say, well, you know, I haven't really been training for it, or I don't know if I can do that. A lot of runs are intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, it's still a 5K. You're doing the 3.1 miles,
right,
but you're having a blast.
Right.
Throughout the course, there's different zones or worlds, as we like to call them, all these lighting and sound elements that, you know, I can describe. You can watch the video, but it really doesn't do it justice until you're there. And all of a sudden you're realizing this is, you know, a run unlike you've ever experienced before.
Well,
and
I mean,
it's a novel idea of making it fun.
Yeah, I can imagine that there's adrenaline outside of the actual running. So all this energy, the lights, the music, that alone in and of itself produces its own, you know, amount of adrenaline. So it's just looking at the pictures, it makes it look like, you know, a lot of energy.
Oh, there's so much energy, and it builds because, you know, that people get there early, they're waiting, and we have to wait, obviously, for the sun to set since we're a nighttime race.
Right.
And so people are just getting excited. We've got our music going a lot of times because we do partner with a charity, and some of our proceeds go to a charity in each city. It just depends on, you know, wherever we go, we partner with a local charity.
Right.
And a lot of times our charities have a face painting station where they're doing black light reactive face paint.
Got it.
You know, so people are doing that and just getting all their glow gear on, and a lot of people come in amazing costumes. It's fantastic. But as that music builds, as our MC gets up there, our mascot is the Stick Man.
Yeah.
And we've got some great dancers that come out, and that energy just builds. And what's fun, too, is that it's something that, you know, it's all ages. So you've got kids in strollers all the way up to, I've seen an 85-year-old in a walker.
And
well, it's available for anyone, but that energy is there, and you're surrounded by all these fantastic people.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. So are there vendors, like food vendors and stuff like that, that actually are on property after the run and part of the after run event?
Definitely. So at every race, we always have food vendors selling food and drink after the race. Depending on the venue, sometimes we're allowed to have stuff beforehand as well.
Huh.
But we make it so our finish line spills into our celebration.
Right.
And that's our big after party.
Right.
DJ, performers, lasers, the whole bit. It's just so much fun, and that's where we have our vendors as well. So we like it. We call it a celebration because it's something to celebrate. You just ran 3 miles.
Right.
And then just stay and have a party.
Right. So, no, it looks dope. So when you're talking about worlds, so as you're running through this 3.1 mile, you pass different sectors or different areas that are themed a certain way or another with a lot of light and its own type of music or whatever. And you can stop, bug out, dance or whatever, or keep going. And then the final, when you finish the race, it's like this big old party.
Yes.
Right. It looks pretty awesome.
It really is just, and people, they kind of tease me because I'm so excited about it, but it really is just so much fun. It's not just that I work for it, but It's something really cool to be a part of because also, you know, because we have this, some people that are really hardcore runners, they have a hard time sometimes wrapping their head around the fact that we want you to take your time on the course. We don't time this 5K. If people want to time it themselves, they're totally welcome to do that. But I tell people, if you finish first, you're doing it wrong. We encourage them to stay and
to have fun.
Pictures and dance.
Yeah,
and
to have fun.
Laugh.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, that's some pretty
running should be fun.
That's some pretty cool costumes on your website. Like on your about page, you have some pretty cool costumes. It looks
people
like
people are so creative.
Yeah.
It's so great to see the creativity all across the country.
So how do you choose a charity to have part of your proceeds go to in each city?
Well, that's actually another thing that I do that's looped in with the registration and then also the HR. So basically, a lot of times because we're gaining a name now, charities will actually reach out to us and say, you know, we're interested in doing this. Can we do it? And so we make it a partnership. And so I'll talk with the charities that are interested. I'll also seek out different organizations and just kind of see what we ask of them is to help us out mostly with volunteers. Because we do have volunteers that help out on the course. They become part of the show. And that's another great thing is just any of the runners, anyone who's part of the part of it, they're part of the show. And so we ask them to provide volunteers and then just kind of help get the word out. And then in turn, in addition to the proceeds that that we give them, we also just are really trying to help increase their visibility. And so as I'm talking with the charities, it just kind of boils down to who really wants to put in a little effort, help us be a part of it, can help, you know, during the week of the race and beforehand to doing that prep. And so it just kind of whittles down to that. So we partnered in San Diego, our race last weekend, with the Boys and Girls Club.
Oh, nice.
San Diego. And personally, I loved that. I used to work for the Boys and Girls Club years ago.
Right.
And
that's a perfect,
you know, personal connection with me.
Yeah, it's a perfect charity, Boys and Girls Club. I mean, this seems like a lot of youthful fun to begin with, you know?
Yes, and that was another great thing because a lot of our volunteers, that's what I was excited about, were actually from the club. You know, kids that this is kind of a new thing for them to volunteer and to get them on that path and just excited about volunteering and running and being healthy. And you see, you know, kids, that's what we like to match our charity with something that kind of fits, something that's very positive and vibrant and you know, it's varied across the country.
Right.
Special Olympics is one that we've done. We've just done a lot of different ones, but I have just really enjoyed our interaction with those charities.
Right, right. So the other thing that I'm curious about is, so you obviously have to go to like a city like San Diego, propose the idea, and then you got to get all the permits and you got to get all the, you know, approvals from all the whoever the hell has to make the approvals. Because I'm looking at a diagram on your website. I mean, 3.1 miles is not a small amount of area. So how do you go about blocking streets and all that other stuff? And especially that it's night and you have this day glow stuff. Where do you get your electric power to power up your panels and all that stuff? How does that work?
Right. Those are great questions. So because we're creating our course, we really like to go to places like the Del Mar Fairgrounds in San Diego. We like to go to fairgrounds because it's kind of a contained space. And as much as we can contain our space, the more we can control it.
Right.
So we really try to avoid being on a lot of public roads and that
kind
of thing. Because then you're working with, you know, we've got to put foil on those lights. So we want to control what light is there and what light is not there.
Right, right.
And so with the fairgrounds, you know, we'll do a lot of loops. And so you're running 3.1 miles, but you might be, you know, kind of twisting and turning and that kind of thing.
Got it.
So we can kind of manipulate the space. Mm-hmm. But that way we can control the lighting and control your experience.
Got it. So, yeah, no, that makes total sense. So I'm not quite sure. I'm assuming you have not done one of these in New York City.
We actually have.
You have? When did you do that?
We did.
That's, go ahead.
Pardon me?
No, go ahead. I wasn't sure if I had read that you did it or not, and after you telling me this, I thought maybe you didn't, but go ahead. So you did one.
Yeah, we did in New York City. It was in September. I was just there for one of the nights. I had been at our Austin, Texas race the night before and then flew out and came for our second night. So New York, our bigger markets, sometimes we're restricted at a venue to how many people we can have. And that one, we had two nights of about 10 to 12,000 people.
Wow.
Each night.
But where was this? What area of New York City was contained enough for you to do this?
It was the aviation grounds.
Ah.
It's out, I'm trying to remember.
In Queens, near LaGuardia?
Yeah.
Airport?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we could, it was, you know, it was a challenge to find a space in New York.
I mean, there's really good property in Rikers Island in the penitentiary. Like, there's about 3.1 miles worth of outdoor workout areas where I'm just kidding. That's what I'm saying. There's not, maybe Central Park, actually. You could do it in Central Park.
Right.
Or you
could run through East Harlem. Amazing, right? That would be incredible.
Well, no, you could do it in Central Park because, relatively speaking, it is contained, but then, mm-hmm. but again, you'd have to go through permits and all these different, you know, department heads, and it's not that simple.
You'd have to pay off the mafia.
Insurance, I'm sure, is just insane with being at night.
Right, so you have
lights.
That's a good question. You guys have to have, like, a ridiculous insurance policy, right?
Yeah, we make sure, you know, and we make sure that we take care of our runners.
Right,
and
right.
And so that we've got, mm-hmm. you know, people on, we haven't really had to use our EMTs or our medical help. We always make sure that everyone's taken care of.
And hopefully you'll never have to use it.
Exactly.
So your next run is in Australia. When is the one after that? And where is your next city in the United States?
So our next city is next week in Miami on Saturday.
Woo-hoo. Wow.
Yeah.
On Saturday in Miami.
I'm excited for Miami.
You guys are busy.
We are. I have been traveling. It's kind of funny. We're based out of Salt Lake City, but it's kind of funny. A lot of us moved from different places to work with the company. So we work corporate, but honestly, I'm in Salt Lake, like, you know, maybe a day out of a week.
Right.
Most of the time. There were 6 weeks straight in the summer where I was gone, and then I had 1 week when I was in the office, and then 5 weeks on the road again. So we've done nearly 40 races, I think, just this year.
Wow.
So
Miami, when are you guys coming back to California? I'm pretty sure you're going to do San Francisco. When are you going to do L.A.? Or San Diego again, because I want to do this.
Definitely. Our 2014 schedule is still up in the air. I'm just kind of finalizing things. And so we definitely will be coming back to many places in California. We have loved our California races. I'm most recently from L.A., so I love coming back to California. We'll be in San Francisco for sure.
Yeah.
L.A., Orange County, and San Diego, and that'll just be throughout the year. So stay tuned on our website.
Yeah, because you did one before San Diego in, what was this? Not Cerritos. You did something in Orange County. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. So
the last 2 weeks we've been down in Southern California.
Got it.
Both races were fantastic.
Got it.
I want to go to the one in Vegas.
Oh, there's one in Vegas?
Yeah.
I want to do one. I mean, I love it.
That'd be cool.
Okay, so walk me through the process. I want to do it. I go on your website, electricrun.com. I go to register.
It's really easy. You press register, it'll take care of you from then on.
Right.
It just asks for the information. You mentioned that there's a lot of cool glow stuff. It's true. You can do that while you're registering. You can order some stuff that we'll have ready for you when you come to get your T-shirt and your bib and, you know, basically everything that you need. You can also, if you want, to go to electricwear.com. And that's where we have a lot of our merchandise available that will just be shipped to your house.
Got
a lot of cool glow stuff, a lot of cool new stuff that's coming out as well. One of my favorites are our zip-up hoodies that glow.
Nice.
And they're just pretty sweet. So as you go through, it just, you know, walks you right through. You can donate some extra to the charity if you would like. And then you just register. You can be part of a team. You get a team discount if you sign up with a team of four or more.
Okay.
And so with that, you just create a team name. I've seen some of the most creative and crazy names all across the country. It's great. And then that's a fun way for a lot of friends, family, coworkers, neighbors to get together and be like, okay, we're part of this team. And they just sign up and all run together.
And what does it cost? So I go register. I choose one of the locations. You said the next one is Miami. I'll choose Miami. And
right. So if you sign up, so when we put our things up, it starts at $45.
Okay.
And that includes, you know, everything that you need and the whole night of the experience. So then we send out emails saying, you know, hey, we do increase our prices. So as we get closer to the date, it can get up to, depending on the market, $60 to $65. So that's why we really do encourage people, you know, buy it first, because then
Got it.
You've got that.
Because you also can transfer it. I was looking at your frequently asked questions. So you can transfer it if you can't make it, blah, blah, blah.
Definitely.
And, yeah.
So we don't have cancellations, but because we're all over the country, you know, we've had some where they couldn't make it to one. And we just say, hey, that's okay. Just transfer it to this race. They go and they're going to be in town somewhere else. They run the race and have a great time.
Awesome. So, and so in Miami, where are you going to be in Miami? What self-contained area in Miami? I know you're not going to South Beach.
You know, that's a great question. I feel really bad that I can't remember.
That's okay.
I'm going to look it up right now. It's so funny. All the cities just start to meld together. It's funny when we're on the road crew, we just kind of, we're like, where are we going? Oh, we're going to Miami. We'll figure it out.
would I be out of line to assume that the first one you guys ever did was in Salt Lake City?
Our first one was Orange County.
Wow, okay.
It was November 30th, and this is kind of funny because I was not full-time with the company yet. I just had helped out with a promo video, and I thought that was kind of going to be it.
Right.
And so I had come in town. I'd been out in New York and had just come back into town in L.A., and we drove down to Orange County and did that race. And it's just kind of funny that now a year later, I mean, you know, I started working with the company a couple months after that, but then coming back to Orange County and having that race again, and just a lot of our runners that were coming back, they'd had a blast then, but you know, it was just so much different now.
Yeah.
Just all the things that we've learned and even just our production, it's just a lot of really cool things.
Right.
So yeah,
right.
Our first one was in Orange County last year.
Got it. I mean, it looks amazing. It looks amazing. And
you guys need to come out. You would love it.
No, I know. I just looked at your your calendar. So you have Miami, then Orlando, and then your 2014 schedule has Baltimore, Inland Empire, maybe Inland Empire, because that's going to be sometime the early part of next year, if not Vegas. But Vegas could be a little crazy, you know.
I hope so. I actually grew up in Vegas.
You did? Okay.
So I'm excited for that one, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds awesome. Well, thank you so much for calling in. I mean, I'm definitely going to, we're definitely going to do it. We're going to do it. We're going to be on top of it, figure it out.
Twish, Team NPR.
Twish Honey was there last Saturday.
Yeah, and I had an absolutely amazing time.
You had a blast.
I'll definitely do it every year. Yes.
You had a blast.
Yes.
You got a little video. I saw your video on Facebook, and I was like, damn, man, I wish I would have went.
I know.
You missed out, dude.
I know. Anyway, so thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, thanks to you guys.
Yeah, and we'll definitely be tuned in and keep everybody posted for the next time.
Wonderful. We'll look forward to seeing you.
Thank you so much, Liz.
Thank you, guys. Have a great night.
Okay, bye-bye. Big up to the Electric Ron and Liz Dunn. That's right. She's talking about, you know, she was in the promoting health industry and she got into this running stuff. So it's interesting that we were just talking about, you know, food and your health, and then the Electric Run is somewhat tied into that. But it's also a community event. Mm-hmm. Right?
Because, absolutely.
Yeah, because they go into a community, they involve the local charity, and then it becomes an event. It sounds fun. I have friends in Orlando. I'm going to tell people about, some of my Orlando listeners, let them know about it.
Yeah, they're going to be doing an electric run in Sudan where tribal warlords help you run. They chase after you.
Yeah, yeah. My man.
Yeah!
Right, that's what I'm talking about. So back to what we were talking about before Liz called in, which is what I was thinking is that, you know, no one does anything about anything until it's almost too late, or until it affects somebody, you know, a loved one or whatever. We're talking about the Gay Men's Health Crisis and the ACT UP organization in New York, which were basically the gay community in New York and in other parts of the country, Miami, San Francisco, whatever. But in New York in the mid 80s, that they basically said, you know, fuck you to the FDA. We're not going to wait. We're not going to wait until you decide that, you know,
These drugs, the experimental drugs, have passed approval on, you know, mice and this, then the other. We're dying. We're dying fast. And fuck it. Use us. I'm, you know, shoot me up with it. And if it wasn't for them to expedite the trial runs of these medications, people would still be fucking dying of AIDS. AIDS would be a big deal. But as a result of these guys, you know, AIDS, HIV cures, not cures, but sustaining medications have come into play. The problem with food and chemicals in our food is that there aren't immediate results. As we were talking about last week, that hydrogenated oils and partially hydrogenated oils, they haven't found enough evidence to say it's bad for you or whatever.
Which, yeah, but here's the deal. They're also getting envelopes of cash and briefcases handed to them underneath the table.
Well, I mean,
the problem with the FDA, or as most people refer to it, the Putting Drugs in Your Children's Food Administration, they have been a for-hire government agency. Well, just like any government agency. But, you know, I mean, it's really disgusting. One of the things, it goes deeper than the food industry, because the food industry is linked up with the pharmaceutical industry.
Right.
They're teaming up together. On one hand, they're pumping you full of diseases, like some little, you know.
And the pharmaceutical industry is connected to the self-masturbatory toy industry.
And that's connected to the hip bone.
And that's connected to the lubrication industry, and so on and so forth.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying is, while one major corporation is creating the disease, the other one is creating the so-called cure for a disease we never even needed. And they're also teamed up with the chemical corporations.
Yeah,
one of the main contributors against the genetically modified foods is DuPont Chemicals.
That's it!
But that's what spurs the economy. See, right. That $300 check you got, that didn't spur the economy. So they said, fuck it. We'll just make people sick.
Right.
And then they'll have to buy the medication to cure themselves.
Well, here. You're replaceable. Who gives a fuck? You're here for a certain amount of time. You die. Who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Big business is last forever, hopefully.
They're too big to fail.
Well, hopefully, you know, General Mills will go on, you know, till the end of time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
ConAgra Foods will go on till the end of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think so, because I think
Monsanto will go on till the end of time.
I don't think they will, because here's the reality. After a while, when you poison the people die. And there's no more people.
The people over here,
eating genetically modified foods and croaking.
Vitamin E, vitamin D, vitamin C over there.
Oakland.
No, but see, they're poisoning people, but they're doing it at a very slow rate. So they're not actually killing the people off. And that's why it's difficult to prove that hydrogenated vegetable oil does anything.
Exactly.
You know,
it's not difficult to prove. What I'm saying
is, apparently it is because same with cigarettes.
We live in the misinformation age where any information can be manipulated. Manipulated. Even manipulated. Words like manipulated manure, can be manipulated manure, to be a different word. And my point is,
manure-related.
Yeah, even, you know, you can manipulate, that's French, different
manup,
words.
Manup.
You can manipulate.
That's French for full of shit.
Fuck manup. You.
Fuck you. I am Persian.
So basically, the thing is, at some point, you know, really what it comes down to is you do have citizens out there who are informed. And
this is what it comes down to. Thankfully, you've tuned into the Nestorius Public Radio, and you're listening to Uncle Ness, and we're going to discuss a lot of things, right? But namely, being responsible, right? Isn't that one of the running themes that we've had on this show? Mm-hmm. Taking responsibility for your own fucking life, okay? You are responsible for what you ingest. You cannot give up your responsibility to anybody or anything, but we do. So here's what happens. Last week, not only did I find out what the peanut butter had, but then I said, fuck it. Let me see what the bread. I bet you the bread's got some bullshit, right?
Oh, yeah.
So this is whole wheat bread. Whole wheat bread, right?
Mm-hmm. Whole wheat.
Whole wheat.
Yo, you come on down and get some whole wheat.
Yo, we just bust a slice in the toaster. Krispy Kringle over there is the moster. Puts a smear out of peanut butter jelly. You don't stop because it's coming out of helly.
Yo, two scoops of lovin' in every box.
You know what I'm saying? Pip, pip, corn pops.
Snap, crackle, and pop a lot.
Dibby dip, don't stop the delish on your Trish. Now I'm saying nutritional. Most definitely the professional.
Yo, silly rabbit, tricks are for chicks with dicks.
You know it. So I look at this whole wheat shit, and let me just read off seriously, and you're gonna have to contain yourself. You have to as we can contain yourself. Yeah. As my man Jeremy. Yo, once in a while you listen to the show and we're talking to Jeremy or who Jeremy. Jeremy.
The chemicals.
Jeremy runs this studio. This is his mastermind. And you know, I met Jeremy, I don't know, a year ago. I fucking love Jeremy. Jeremy's my man. You know what I mean? So when we talk.
What's going on?
Nothing. When we talk to Jeremy, we talk about food and shit like that. I turn around and Jeremy's hitting the bong. He's like. So it just cracks me up. That's all. We're just chilling.
You know, well, what else are you going to do? We're here at Skid Row. What are you Skid supposed Row to studio? Do? Fucking put out a planning pot?
Hey, I don't give a fuck what Jeremy smokes. That motherfucker, I don't know anybody more geniosified than him. So I don't give a fuck.
Yo, my man, got fucking balloons.
Yo, this dude. Yo, seriously?
Just exploded.
Seriously? Yo, we got exploding balloons.
You don't know what was in that pipe. You know what? That was non-HMO, genetified
marijuana.
Fucking, he had salmon in there.
Anyway.
He's just putting salmon.
Anyway, so let's get back to the serious shit here. So basically, I look at the ingredients, and there's a lot of ingredients that you recognize, that you understand, and you can spell. But there were, like, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ingredients. Six chemical ingredients that I had no fucking idea what this shit was. Okay? So let me read it off. You had sodium stearoyl lactate. Okay? Exactly. We had azodicarbonamide.
That is my cousin.
Hold on. Stay tuned, fellas. Then we had monocalcium phosphate. Okay.
Fuck faces.
Then we had calcium sulfate. Then we had calcium peroxide. Then we had ammonium sulfate. Now, I just want bread, motherfucker. I don't want a fucking kidney transplant.
Well, here's the thing. If you made a loaf of bread, like you go out to the country and you know, and back in the day, someone makes a loaf of bread.
Like in France.
Somebody makes a loaf of bread in the morning.
Wheat.
It's stale by the nighttime. Or maybe it could last one night if you wrap it up, and then it'll last by the next day, it goes bad. When you buy a loaf of bread and it can last for months sitting there exposed to air, it's bad news. Basically, as a general rule, food that does not spoil when exposed to air is not good for you.
No, it doesn't oxidize. Well, it doesn't break down.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't be buying so much food that you shouldn't eat it within a day or two.
Correct.
Seriously.
Correct.
You don't need it.
But most importantly, you shouldn't, seriously, you shouldn't buy food with more ingredients that you cannot pronounce than the actual ingredient that you're looking to eat.
Yeah.
Like you look at peanut butter. No, think about it.
Oh yeah, peanut butter.
You look at bread. You should have water. You should have yeast. You should have flour. Right? Maybe some egg in it or something.
A little sugar, maybe.
A little sugar, maybe. Yeah. If you have anything other than those four ingredients, especially 5 or 6 ingredients that you cannot spell.
Yeah, like monocalcium phosphate.
Yeah. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. You understand? Yeah. Something is fucking wrong.
When you defecate,
hold on. You should have some of this. Something is fucking wrong with my bread.
Yeah, okay. When you defecate and your shit has an eyeball on it and it climbs out of your toilet and starts killing people, that's a problem.
Twish, you had a question.
I have a question.
Yes.
Have you ever made bread before?
Have I ever made bread?
Yes.
I do believe I have made bread. I don't know if I made it from scratch.
Yeah.
But why did you ask that question?
Because, okay.
Because it's a pain in the fucking ass.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you 100%. Exactly. Thank you. Because I am a baker, okay? Right.
But how much bread do you
need? I'm a candlestick maker.
Fuck you, I hit that first.
No.
Here's the thing. And also, you have to think about, I mean, I agree with you 100%, but the general public can't afford the organic products out there.
No, I know.
It's much easier for a family of four to feed their family for, on the dollar menu.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that this is a good thing, but that's the reality.
Right. That's a bigger picture, though. That's a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the picture of, we're talking about minimum wage, you know, self-sustainability and all that other stuff.
Socioeconomic.
Right. But I'm talking about for those of us, and I don't mean to discriminate for those of y'all who are on a dollar budget menu, but for those of us that know, that believe and think we know better, right?
Right.
So we just take it for granted, right, that the food that we eat, listen, I can just speak for myself, right? Mm-hmm. So I know about hydrogenated oils. I know about
partially
chemicals.
Hydrogenated.
Partially. I've seen the movie Food Inc., but you're like, yeah, whatever, fuck it. You know what I mean? But then let me just read some of this, please. Indulge me. Okay, just indulge me here. Sodium stearoyl lactate. Okay. Sodium stearoyl lactate, or SSL, is a versatile FDA-approved food additive. It is one type of a commercially available lactylate. SSL is non-toxic, biodegradable, and typically manufactured using biorenewable feedstocks. First of all, you're talking fucking Star Trek shit here, okay? This is not food, all right? I don't give a fuck if it's toxic or not. Because SSL is a safe and highly effective food additive, it is used in a widely variety of products, ranging from baked goods and desserts to pet foods. As described by the Food Chemical Codex, 7th edition, SSL is a cream-colored powder or brittle solid. SSL is currently manufactured by the esterification of stearic acid with lactic acid and partially neutralized with either food-grade soda ash, which is sodium carbonate, or caustic soda. Anyway, right now you're going into some crazy shit. To be labeled as SSL for sale within the United States, the product must conform to the specifications detailed in 21 CFR 172.846 and the most recent edition of the Food Chemical Codex. Let me just see something here.
In case you wanted to look that up.
Right. SSL finds widespread application in baked goods, blah, 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 blah. Approved uses and maximum use levels in the United States described in 24, whatever, jerk me off. The largest marketed use of SSL is yeast-related bakery goods. SSL is used in the majority of manufacturers' bread buns, wraps, tortillas, and similar bread buns products to ensure consistent product quality. Use levels for baked goods will vary between 0.25 and 0.5% based on the flour. Anyway, this is health and safety. Including SSL have been... lactylates, including SSL, have been subjected to extensive safety evaluations prior to being FDA approved for use as a food additive. The oral LD50 of SSL for rats was established by Schuller and Thompson in 1952 as being over 25 grams or kilograms per body weight. Well, you know, guys, this is the least harmful of them all. Let me go to the azodicarbonamide. Let me go to that. It's a chemical compound within the molecular formula C2H4O2N4. It is a yellow to orange red odorless crystalline powder. As a food additive, it is known by the E number E927. Okay.
I get extra E927 in my power shake, please?
Let me just show you this, okay? This is the first one. Azodicarbonamide is used in the American food industry as a food additive, a flour bleaching agent, and improving agent. It reacts with moist flour as an oxidizing agent. The main reaction product is urea, a derivative of urea, which is stable during baking. Secondary reaction products include semicarbazide and ethyl carbamate.
Now you're just making some shit up.
Yeah, I know. The United States permits the use of azodicarbonamide at levels up to 45 ppm.
Parts per million.
In Australia and Europe, the use of azodicarbonamide as a food additive is banned. Let me tell you why. The principle.
Yo, tell us why, son.
Hey, yo. The principle use of azo dicarbonamide.
Carbon motherfuckers.
Is in the production. Check this out. Let me go back. The principal use of azo dicarbonamide is in the production of foamed plastics as an additive. The thermal decomposition of azo dicarbonamide results in the evolution of nitrogen, carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and ammonia gases, which are trapped in the polymer as bubbles to form a foamed article. I'm going to stop right there.
Yeah.
That's the second additive. Let me go to one, two. Let me do four more. Because you're bugging. You're bugging the fuck out. This is monocalcium phosphate. This is the third inexplicable, unpronounceable, not able to spell chemical that I found in my fucking whole wheat bread, okay? Monocalcium phosphate is a chemical compound with the formula CaH2PO42. It is commonly found as a monohydrate. Preparation. It is created for fertilizers by treating pulverized phosphate rock with sulfuric acid or phosphoric acid. In labs, it is prepared from the reaction between calcium carbonate with phosphoric acid. Let me just tell you what this shit is. This is unbelievable. This is incredible. Okay. Calcium dihydrogen, what is it? Dihydrogen phosphate is also used in the food industry as a leavening agent to cause baked goods to rise because it is acidic. When combined with an alkali ingredient, commonly sodium bicarbonate, baking soda, or potassium bicarbonate, it reacts to produce carbon dioxide and a salt. But some of this stuff is just unbelievable, what they put in here. The active ingredient in the product, monocalcium phosphate, is identical to that of a super phosphate, but without the presence of calcium sulfate that is formed if sulfuric acid is used instead of phosphoric acid. All right, guys, this is just not right. This is fucking straight up wrong. Okay, the calcium sulfate.
There was a time in the world when the person making your food was not smarter than you.
Was not a chemist. This is the one that got me.
They didn't have a degree. You know, I mean, this is ridiculous. No, there was a time when, you know, when you respected the person and you trusted the person that made your shit.
There was a time that the person making your food was your mom or dad.
There was a time when the person who made your food washed their hands.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is the one that got me right here. Now, you guys know my background is in construction. I'm an electrician by trade. I've worked in construction, blah, blah. Calcium sulfate is the fourth item that I did not know what the hell it was. But I'm going to tell you what this thing does. This is used commercial use in the synthesis of sulfuric acid. Hold on a second. All right. So this is used in baking products, but this is calcium sulfate is a common laboratory and industrial chemical in the form of anhydrite, the nearly anhydrous form. It is used as a dissident. It is also used as a coagulant in products like tofu. In the natural state, unrefined calcium sulfate is a translucent crystalline white rock. When sold as a color indicating variant under the name dryerite, it appears blue or pink due to impregnation with cobalt chloride, which functions as a moisture indicator. The hermihydrite is better known as plaster of Paris, while the dihydrate occurs naturally as gypsum. Guys, this is fucking sheetrock. That's what this is. This is plaster of Paris.
Awesome.
Or sheetrock. That's what this shit is.
Yeah,
okay?
It helps you sit in your chair longer.
All right. The anhydrous form occurs naturally as B anhydride. Depending on the method of calcination of calcium sulfate, dihydrate-specific hemihydrates are sometimes distinguished alpha hemihydrate and beta hemihydrate. They appear to differ only in crystal size. Anyway, this is fucking ridiculous what they use. In flue gas desulfurization, exhaust gases from fossil fuel power stations and other processes, e.g. cement manufacturers, scrubbed to reduce their sulfur oxide content by injecting finely ground limestone or lime. This produces an impure calcium sulfide, which oxidizes on storage to calcium sulfite. These are just, guys, look, get a piece of paper, write this shit down. Sodium stearate lactate. Just go on your fuck. Seriously.
Just kill yourself now.
No.
And make sure you don't know how to spell that.
No, seriously.
Just eat salad.
Seriously. Seriously. Yeah. No, but even if you eat salad.
Oh, come on. There's none of that in there.
No.
It's the ground that it grows in.
No. Even if you eat salad, you're subjected to pesticides.
Oh, my God.
You are.
So let's grow some vegetables.
No. You're not going to be safe.
Yeah. You're fucked.
Doomed?
You're going to die, bro.
No.
But, you know, one of the things you touched on earlier, which I want to go back to,
You're not going to be safe. It ain't going to happen. But what I'm trying to say is educate yourself on what it is that your food has, right?
Yes.
And try to minimize the chemicals that you're eating. You're not going to be safe. There's almost nothing that you can eat.
Eat a carrot.
Eat a carrot. But if the carrot has not been washed or purified, blah,
shove
blah, blah.
Shove a carrot in your eye.
Yeah.
That's safe.
If it's not purified. You're in deep shit.
Well, you know, you touched on something where we talked about it being socioeconomic. Yes. And you made the comment that a lot of less wealthy families need to go to the dollar menu.
Well, people who can't afford to make choices.
I get it. But what I'm saying is, it's not because they don't have money. It's because
they're not educated.
It's because they lack education on how to cook basic meals.
Right.
It's inexpensive. It's very inexpensive.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
I understand the 99-cent meal isn't expensive, but you know what else is inexpensive?
No, it's inexpensive to cook at home.
That's what I'm saying. If when you're dealing with these poor people, or the poor of the United States, it's... they don't know how to prepare proper meals.
That's it.
Do they have the time?
Like, yeah.
Okay, well, time is a different thing.
Education. But, there's a lot of factors.
Nobody in America has time.
No. There's a lot of...
it's easier for poor people
I'm not speaking to the poor people here. I'm sorry. With all due respect,
It sounds like a shitty statement.
I think it's terrible. No. I absolutely agree.
You know why I'm not speaking to the poor people? Because poor people don't have time. In order to eat right, you have to plan. Yeah. In order to plan, you have to have time. If you're poor, I'm not talking about you crackheads out there, but if you're poor, you're a single mom, and you got five kids, you're busy working your ass for minimum fucking wage, you got to put your kids in school, you got to feed them some, you got to give them breakfast, a bag of potato chips, which has all that diatomaceous whatever the hell I just read about.
Yeah, but it's always been that way. I mean, I'm saying is that if you go back hundreds of years ago, parents cooked for their kids. They learned how to make basic meals. And if you know how to make basic meals, and and not just rice-a-roni or minute rice or microwave popcorn, but actually
I took home ec when I was in
the family dynamics were absolutely different back then as well.
Well, first of all, microwave popcorn has a lot of them have partially and fully hydrogenated vegetable oil. So, this is what
I'm talking
about. So there's certain things that when you start getting educated, you we eat out a lot. Most of us here, we go out to eat a lot. Most of the times I don't cook at home. Most of the times. When I cook at home, right? Like, I'll make a grilled cheese sandwich, like the other day. I made a grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh, that was the shit.
But I went to Trader Joe's and I got the grilled cheese encrusted with bacon bits. So I made a grilled cheese sandwich. It was delicious, whatever.
Yeah.
I use butter, not margarine. Many times I'll cook meat, burgers. You know what I mean? But what I'm saying is, when you're out in the supermarket buying popcorn, look at your choices. When you're buying...
you got to read the label.
Read the label. When you're buying cereal. I mean, a lot of this stuff that I was looking at here had like the food coloring. There was in Tang. There was in sodas.
But also, don't be fooled by there's a lot of bait and switch, though, too, in that where they say, oh, it's low fat. So they just put a bunch of sugar or sweeteners in there, artificial sweeteners in there. And they say, oh, it's low fat. It's low fat. You know, it's not the fat that's bad for you. It's the trans fats. It's the fake shit that they put in these foods.
Well, it's not the fat for you. It's the amount of fats that you consume versus, well, it depends.
Your body can handle fat. Your body can deal with that as long as you balance your diet out. If you're eating a lot of fiber with meat, you know, there's a lot of fat in fish and
fat is actually, can be good for you.
Yeah, it could be good for you. The fat in avocado is great for you. The fat in peanut butter and all that. The fat in meat, you know, there are things in red meat that you need to you know, grow muscle and check
this out. Sodium sulfite. I'm not going to get into what the hell it is, but these are the applications of sodium sulfite. Okay. Sodium sulfite is primarily used in the pulp and paper industry. It is used in water treatment as an oxygen scavenger agent. In the photographic industry, that is a fucking trip. In the photographic industry, to protect developer solutions from oxidation and as hypoclear solution to wash fixer. In other words, when you print photographs, there's chemicals to develop the image that you've put on the photosensitive paper. That's a developer. Then there's fixer that fixes the developing process so that once you get your image at a certain point, it doesn't keep developing and fucking turn black. And then there's a wash, right? And this is what the hypoclear solution is made out of this. To wash fixer from film and photo paper emulsions. In the textile industry, as a bleaching, desulfurizing, and dechlorinating agent. And in the leather trade, for the sulfilization of tanning extracts. It is used in the purification of TNT for military use. It is used in chemical manufacturing as a sulfonation and sulfomethylation agent. It is used in the production of sodium thiosulfate. It is used in other applications, including froth flotation of ores. I think that has to do with mining. Oil recovery. Check this. Ready? Food preservatives and making dyes. How the fuck could you have something that's good for stopping the development of photos, right? Film or photosensitive paper, purification of TNT dynamite for military use, right? The fashion industry, the bleaching and defalsarization in the leather trade. I mean, come on, man. This shit is crazy. Sodium nitrate is another one. It's used as a fertilizer and a raw material for manufacture of gunpowder, okay? Gunpowder. And it's also used as a food additive. It's just, these are ingredients that are in your food and your soda. I mean, just look them up and you'll see what the fuck it is. It's unbelievable.
Well, nitrates cause cancer, throat cancer, leukemia.
Forget what they
make your hair fall out.
Check it out.
I'm
going to
start buying my bullets from my gun at Whole Foods.
Check this out. You don't even have to. You don't even have to look at scientific or medical. You don't even have to go further to find out or to, you know, surmise that some of this stuff causes cancer, Alzheimer's, violent reaction in kids.
They're putting paint chips in your jelly.
You don't have to worry about that. Just read the
shit. You're worried about lead in the toys coming from China, and yet we're fucking putting,
anything that you can use to stimulate dynamite. Clean leather.
A dynamite cleaner.
You know what I mean?
You know,
and
when you're
preserving
done cleaning,
food.
When
come
you're
on.
Done cleaning that dynamite, maybe you'd like to jump in this loaf of bread.
Is this wrong? But what I'm saying is, look, to go back to what you were saying, Twisted, not everybody can afford to, not everybody has the time or can afford to make your own meals at home. Let's face it. Let's go back to, you know, the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s, when people had farms, right? And the reason you had big families, because everyone in the family had a job. You worked in the farm. You got up at the crack of dawn. You ate a meal by 6. You were in bed by 7. There was no fucking TV. There was no internet. Mm-hmm. And food, there were no pesticides because you grew what you could eat.
Right.
Or, if you were lucky, what you can cultivate and maybe trade. Mm-hmm. Right? So you had no cattle, so you created corn for some beef, you know, or some skin to protect your from the weather because it's cold. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about the beginning of the civilization. You know what I mean? And then now we have fast forward to like excess amounts of foods and no one has time. Anyway, we have a caller. Caller, thank you for calling
Hello?
To the Sorriest Public Radio Show. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, I just wanted to share some thoughts.
Sure, please. What's your name and where are you calling from?
I'm Shira and I'm calling from New York.
Sarah, how are you,
New
Sarah?
New York.
Hey, yo. Good. Boston. Are you originally, before we move forward, are you originally from New York?
No, I'm from the West Coast.
Okay, I'm originally from New York.
Nice. Yeah. I can tell where you're at.
Yo, it's like, bust it. I got mad cats of flavor with the homeless ass scent in the bad pass on the train. Insane in the membrane. Clop, pop, 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 don't stop. All right, go ahead. So you got some thoughts, Sarah.
Well, so I agree with everything you guys are saying,
actually,
and I'm a big fan of organic food and and that whole movement. But just to complicate it a little bit.
It is complicated.
Is the fact that the other side to what you guys are talking about, I mean, so, it's not that parents cooked food for their kids. It's that mothers cooked food for their kids. And part and parcel to the whole agricultural change, the industrial agricultural change, in the 40s and 50s was women also being freed up to go out to work outside the home.
Right.
And the other thing is, you know, despite the cancer causing elements and the diabetes causing elements, the world population is, you know, exponentially higher than it's ever been. And a lot of that is also supported. I mean, if everybody's growing their own oranges with organic soil, you actually can't support
the
world population.
No, billions. Right. That, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
So are you saying we should kill off part of the population?
Well, I'm just saying.
We should keep it as it is and put more chemicals in so people die faster.
No, she's saying that.
Right.
Self-regulate here.
But the overall thing is just to be mindful of what you're eating and at least try to investigate what it is that's being put in your food. Listen, you're not going to get away. I mean, there's no way you can get around it. You can't.
It's in our meats as well.
It's in your meat.
It's real part of this games. Free market economy that you can have
underwear.
Seven different types of loaves of bread, so but you have a choice.
No, it is. It's in your underwear. There's dyes. There's chemicals used in the textiles. It's all over.
Real Hunger Games. What if you put seven people in?
It's gone too far, but here's the other thing. Going back, I don't know if you did. You listen? Have you been tuned in from the beginning of the show?
Yeah, I had to step away for a second to do some work. So I made
of course. I mean, you got to do some work. You know what I mean?
Do work.
Big up to all the people that got the job. Big up to all those people that got responsibility and do their job right. Big up to all the people that listen to the Nestorius Public Radio and take a break to go to work. Definitely. Absolutely. But if you will, I mean, you will listen. I don't know if you listen to the thing is that the way you can effectuate change is by enough people saying this is bullshit. We're not dealing with it anymore. Part of what you're saying is that there's so many people that not only can we not individually or collectively grow organic vegetables, fruits, and meats and all that stuff. But everyone's busy. Everyone's, you know, occupied and distracted with 50 million things that it's not really a big problem, you know.
Well, no, just to say, like, we need change, but it can't go back to necessarily what it was like 1,000 years ago.
Oh, no, it's too late.
You know, that's just...
It's too late. That train broke down.
There's a lot of people who want to do that, and that's not. It just doesn't seem realistic.
No. There's no that train broke down. That's never going to happen. No, we got to move forward with what we have.
Right.
But I mean, the Food and Drug Administration is just one of these government agencies that's just like, I mean, it's obvious that they're just full of shit, and you know, it's just like...
And they're really far behind, like, Europe. Like, there's a lot of chemicals and items that, you know, the European Union prohibits.
Well, it's by design. It's by these big food corporation lobbyist groups that, you know, do the bait and switch act, and they and then, you know, they you know, you follow the bouncing ball, and all that logo is pretty, and you know, all that other bullshit. But this is what I'm trying to say. On an individual level, the most important thing is that, listen, if you look at a label of your cereal and you, let's say Cheerios, and you look at, you know, one of the ingredients is monocalcium phosphate, and you say, what is monocalcium phosphate? What the fuck is that? And then you go online and you go, this is a fertilizer. It uses a fertilizer. And then you start saying, wait a minute. Do I want to eat fucking Cheerios? Forget Cheerios. Do I want to eat monocalcium? Do I need to eat monocalcium phosphate? Do I need to eat that? That's the question you should ask yourself. Because if you don't need to eat it, what are your alternative? You know, what are your alternatives? Can you eat, you know, a whole grain? Could you eat, I don't know, muesli? Oatmeal. No, I'm serious. Could you eat something else? Could you eat an organic banana with your muesli? Think about it. Whatever. There's other alternatives, and it comes down to just changing the way you think and training your thought process and your shopping patterns. That's all I'm saying. And you know, you can do it. Your boyfriend, if you have one, you can do it in your household, little by little. Your friends, because most people are followers, right? Most people are followers.
Yes, they are.
They're like, Twitch, what is that green liquid you're putting in your Cheerios? Oh, this is organic jumbo jelly juice. It's really good. Mm. It's an antioxidant. Mm. It's really good. And you're like, really? Then you look it up, jumbo jelly, you know, gummy juice, and wow, it's got good property, whatever. So you start eating it, and people start eating it, and so on and so forth.
That's what happened with coconut water.
Yeah.
So I like coconut water.
Yeah, I love coconut water.
You weren't drinking that,
too? Oh, my God.
You weren't drinking that a year ago.
Oh, get out of here.
So,
no.
Sarah, what do you do,
All
Sarah?
All of a sudden.
Get out of here.
What do you do, Sarah? Are you still on the air?
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear you say that. I'm an attorney, actually.
Okay, you're
so
an attorney.
So I know all about the CFR sections and what a mess it is to look up regulations.
Yeah. Got it. And I'm going to guess by your accent you live in Brooklyn.
I do live in Brooklyn. And I'm actually part of a food co-op that's the oldest and largest food co-op in the country, and it's full of organic stuff.
What's the name of that food co-op?
The Park Slope Food Co-op.
Park Slope Food Co-op. Big up to the Park Slope Food Co-op! Now, where is the Park Slope? Obviously in Park Slope, but what are the intersections? What's the intersection?
It's on Union Street between 6th and 5th.
Awesome. Oh, I'm going back to New York in December. Big up to the Park Slope Food Co-op, you bomba clad! Yeah. That's awesome. You know what? You got to give it up for the food co-op. You guys volunteer shifts and all that stuff so that you can buy food.
Right.
I know all about the food co-op.
But what it does is it makes organic food affordable, because I do checkout, actually, as my shift. And, I mean, at least a third of the people are, like, on food stamps.
Right.
Buying organic produce.
Oh, really? Really? There are people on food stamps?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's really
cheap.
Awesome.
I mean, it's a non-profit, basically, so you get it all really cheap.
That's awesome. You know, keep doing that. I'm serious. Look, it's about education. Am I going to buy popcorn, microwave popcorn, if it has fully or partially hydrogenated oils?
Hell no.
Am I going to buy Hebrew National or Nathan hot dogs when they got nitric acids and all that shit?
Hell no.
Am I going to eat my burger when it has 80% body fat and no byproducts and yellow number 7 and dye E257?
Yo, hell no.
Am I going to eat the pizza that looks like my girlfriend's pockmarked face with the biocarbonate diglycerides and all that stuff in your eyes?
Motherfucker, hell no.
Am I going to eat that steak, that cheese steak that's medium rare that I love with the spicy sauce and the seasoning that I don't know how to pronounce?
Yo, you think I'm going to eat stuff just because Toucan Sam says I can?
Hell no!
Testify, brother.
Hey, Sarah, thank you so much for calling
in.
And if we don't see you or speak to you in the next couple of weeks, happy Thanksgiving. Be safe. Say hello to all my people over there in Park Slope Food Co-op.
You guys too.
Peace out.
Bye.
Thank you, Sarah. That's awesome.
I'm hungry.
Yeah!
Time to get some D Street pizza. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, we're going to go there. We're coming to the close of the show.
D-Town Burgers.
I just want to say, you know, we do fuck around here on the Notorious Public Radio Show. We have a good time. We love to mess around. We just act like, you know, wackadoos all the time. That's because we are. We really are. You know what I mean? And it's not wrong with that. It's not wrong. Be who you are. I'm not professing to want to extend my life more than what I'm supposed to be here on Earth. But while I'm here on Earth, I want to try to avoid, you know, broccoli from growing from behind my ear. You know what I mean? I want to avoid having to get a kidney transplant. You know what I mean? Before my time. I want to avoid Alzheimer's if I can remember not to. You know what I'm saying? So what I'm trying to say is, if you have the opportunity, which I know you do, when you go to the supermarket, you need to investigate, take responsibility, educate yourself, and just look at what you're eating. And you know what? Like Sarah, if there's an opportunity to join a food co-op, listen, do it. You know what I mean? I know they're in LA, mm-hmm. but LA is so damn big and vast and spread out. I know in San Francisco, they got food co-ops up the yin yang.
Mm-hmm.
And in New York, there's a few places. I know I'm familiar with the Park Slope one. And I know there's one or two in Manhattan, I remember. But there's a lot of them in Brooklyn, two or three probably, if I'm not mistaken. Some in Queens. Staten Island, maybe? Nah, those guys are Italian. They're like, forget a bar. I don't need no fucking. Forget a bar.
Have a little Stromboli.
Hey, yo, forget about that shit. Forget about the food co-op, huh? Give me some more fucking salchich. You know what I mean? So forget about Staten Island. But do that shit. Volunteer at a food co-op. Even if you don't give a shit about organic food, just volunteer. Check out what people are doing. You know, they're taking a proactive stance in how they get their food and how, you know, they consume it, how they purchase it. And, you know, it's an affordable way of getting it. So just be mindful of what you're eating. Look at the labels. Do what you got to do. And stay tuned every Thursday night, 9 to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, midnight to 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time for you New York fucks. Go to iTunes. Go to podcasts. Peep out Notorious Public Radio. Hit that subscription button. Make sure you turn on your motherfucking iTunes program on your laptop, on your iPhone, on your MacBook. Make sure that it automatically updates the episodes as they come. Go to NotoriousPublicRadio.com if you ain't got nothing better to do with your life. Go to SkidRowStudios.com. How many shows do we got now? Jeremy,
1,000.
We got 1,000 motherfucking shows here. We got titty shows. We got shows about colors. We got shows about seeing double. We got all sorts of motherfucking shows.
We got clown shows.
We got clown shows, porno shows. We got dot matrix shows. And this Thursday, this coming Saturday, 2 days from tomorrow, we're having the stand down Veterans Day show. Is that going to be live?
Yeah, it's going to be live.
From 8 to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, right?
Yep.
8 to 3 p.m. There's going to be a sampling of all the shows on SkidRowStudios.com. We all going to get like a 15-minute of fame type shit. And it should be cool. From 8 to 3 p.m., listen in. Go to SkidRowStudios.com. Tune in live. I mean, shit, you're making pancakes. You're eating diglycerides. You're eating fucking polyurethane. And you're eating hydrogenated flim-flam oils. Might as well put some shit on and background noise and enjoy your death process. You know what I'm saying? But that's it. We out. We're loving you. Thanks for tuning in.
Ooh-wee, it's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along.